The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details. Art is Our Perception is proudly supported by Arts Manahiku. Check them out on Facebook. Are you involved in the arts in Southland? Are you an artist? Is your organisation involved in the arts? Do you need more people to know what it is you do? Media training, social networking or website development? Do you need help with professional development or just getting in touch with the right people? Talk to Arts Manahiku because they're here to help. Email them kia ora@artsmanahiku.co.nz. or look for them on Facebook. The Arts Advocates for the South, Arts Marihiku. You're listening to Art is Our Perception, a show brought to you with thanks and gratitude to the good people at Arts Marihiku, the Arts Advocates in the South. Don't forget to keep your eyes and ears open for everything around Night of the Arts coming up in May this year. Art is Our Perception is brought by Arts Marihiku, as I say, and if you need to get in touch with them, check out their website, artsmarihiku.co.nz, their Facebook page, or you could send them an email, kia ora@artsmarihiku.co.nz. Things repertory for this episode, the play Night Must Fall by Emlyn Williams is coming up at Repertory House March 27th and 28th, a couple of days off, and then back from April 2nd to the 4th. The director is Jason Fraser. Welcome back to Art is Our Perception, Jason.
It's an absolute pleasure being back.
It's been months. I know. And by the way, happy birthday for next week too.
Oh, thank you for slipping that in there.
The play Night Must Fall is not your usual genre as a director.
It definitely is not, and it's taken a lot of prep from my behalf. I've had to actually go and study the type of genre it is, what the expectations are and all that sort of stuff, so it's really not my wheelhouse at all. Yes.
So what's it about?
So, you see, it's a thriller, and...
Sorry, in my head I just saw Michael Jackson.
Yeah. No, the other type of thriller.
Right.
So not the scary Michael Jackson thriller, but the actual thriller, as in psychological thriller and stuff like that. So we're moving to that realm for this, because this was one of the first shows that Repertory did on 90 years ago. So we're celebrating our 90th anniversary this year. And so the committee asked me to do one of our shows from those years, and I went through the whole three that we did that year and said, well, Night Must Fall was the one that sort of appealed to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much about the thriller or the play itself. It's more about how a person who seems totally normal changes into that type of narcissistic, psychological sort of thing. Because the play starts off and you actually know that the play is about a murder. There's actually two murders in the play. And so what the whole play, the journey is actually... This man comes into this household. He's currently dating the housemaid and the thing, and unfortunately, they've had a bit too much fun, and so he has to, because of the times, has to step up the responsibility and step forward and be that father and actually, you know, propose marriage. And the household's trying to do that, but then gradually he manipulates his way into the household and how it runs and all that sort of stuff. All the while, there's a murder that's happened in the forest, because it's set in a bungalow in a forest, and so all the time there. And so we've got the Scotland Yard are looking for the murderer, and of course it's quite a graphic murder and stuff like that. You don't see the murder, so don't shriek. but it's that,
or do you?
you might see something, but it's that progression from someone who is completely ordered into absolutely losing it, and the narcissism and all that sort of stuff come in the path of, you know, all that sort of stuff that comes through when he finally gets caught. So, and there's one character, there's an interesting dynamic of conflict in there between one of the households who's like Olivia, played by Maggie Perry. She's like the niece of the matriarch, Mrs. Terrence, who's Julie Smith. And she automatically gets her heckles up and thinks there's something wrong with this fella and stuff like that. So it's all that whole story like that. So it's quite intriguing.
So picking up on the time it was written and, you know, performed 90 years ago.
Yes.
Child out of wedlock.
Yeah,
it's all
I know.
A bit saucy, really, isn't it?
Well, you tell you what, that was probably one of the hardest things to do, because when we had a look around, because it is actually set in 1936, and so, well, actually, it was on 1934. It was actually first performed, and of course, we had to. Part of it was to source the props and the and all that sort of stuff that was around there, because no electricity, because basically. Part of the premise is that they use paraffin and paraffin lamps and stuff like that. So I had
to... Oh, God, fire hazard.
Yeah, I know. So I had to move the whole play forward 20 years. So I've actually set it in the 1950s. And basically the premise is that this bungalow in the forest hasn't yet got all its electronics and stuff like that. So they still use paraffin lamps, because the paraffin's actually part of the whole...
It's a key element.
Yeah, it's a key element, as they say, of the whole thing. So that was interesting. And I had to update the language, like things like premulator and truanion, which is a premulator is just an old-fashioned word for a pram, and a truanion.
I'm old enough to know that, Jason.
Yes. But a truanion, I had to actually go to the dictionary to find that one.
I feel good.
And it was a horse-drawn carriage that the bobbies used to go on the back.
All right.
Where they went and did murders and stuff like that. So we updated all that. So and we made it and made the language less, more, I meant more understandable to the to now sort of people, you know. Yeah.
So, for you as a director, how did the mindset have to change going into working in a different, deeper genre?
It was a lot of research, so much research. And the first thing I had to do was I had read the play, and the first thing I did, I had to make a decision. Well, I can't really do it here. We're going to have to make some decisions and where it is. And the play, in its full text, is very long. It goes for like 3 hours. So we're going to have to make some cuts, and we're going to have to modernise it and stuff like that. So that is the basis. That's your foundation and stuff like that. And then you have to go into each individual character and stuff like that. I mean, the funny thing about comedy is that you have a setup, and then you have the line, and you can work your actors around that dialogue. But when you've got a pure straight play and you're delving into the psychology of people rather than just having a laugh, that's where it enters a whole different realm. And hats off to all those people who do that sort of stuff, because it was really quite a thing. So I had researched all the characters, had to research the time and the place. Like, for example, our main antagonist, I had to go actually into, okay, what would a narcissist do? What, you know, how would a narcissist act? I had to go through, check out all the character arcs. How does he interact with this person, or she interact with that person and stuff like that? And how does this influence him? And actually, how did he get caught at the end? What was his mistakes? You know, and that, so it was a real deep delve, as if you're an investigator yourself.
Yep.
And then once you find out all the relationships, the conflict, how each character is reacting or interacting with each other, then it's easy to say, okay, you know, looking at a person, he's got deceitfulness, he's manipulative, he doesn't have empathy or remorse and all that sort of stuff, all part of it, like a psychological profile. And so we put that into them. So I made my actors, they had to write a diary of the whole time that they're there, and they had to do their own backstory as well. So it's very Stravinsky sort of way of doing
it. How have they reacted to that?
Really, really positively. And I mean, I am so blessed with such a really good class, because they absolutely are really working their behinds off.
So let's go through it. You've mentioned Maggie Perry and Julie Smith.
Yep.
Who else have you got?
Okay, so we've got Julie Smith is playing Mrs. Terrence, who's the matriarch of the house. We've got Maggie Perry, who's playing Olivia Grain, who is the niece of one of the antagonists, or the interest, if you like, of the thing. Then we have Neil MacDonald, who's playing Hubert Laurie, who is a love interest, or has a love interest in Olivia, played by Maggie.
Method really is.
And then we've got lovely Annette Cochran, who's the nurse. Then we've got Kelly Post, who's playing Dora, the poor unfortunate housemaid who unfortunately got into a bit of trouble. And then we've got Sebastian Fabre, who's playing the inspector, who gets him in the end. Then we have Aisha Williams, who hasn't been with us for a while.
Been a couple of years since she's been on
Been a couple
board.
Of years since she's treated the board. She's,
bloody good.
She's
though.
A great wee actress, and she's a comic relief. So she's actually, Mrs. Terrence is Aisha Williams, and Mrs. Bramson is Julie Smith, and she's a cook. And then we've got Danny Duncanfield, who's playing the part of Dan, who's a bellhop who comes in and comes into the environment because of his relationship with Dora the housemaid and stuff like that. So you've got probably two or three Oscar winners there and stuff like that. So a really good, and Oscar nominees, really good cast, and they have been really good. And it was a bit, I think from their perspective, it was a bit weird them having to go write a diary and stuff like that, and then I made them do their own characterisation and their backstory and stuff like that. Then we discussed it, and the way that we rehearsed was prior to the scene, right, we're going to discuss it, we're going to go through the lines, and what do you think's happening here and what you think's happening here, and then what emotion do you think you're feeling here, or what emotion do you think you're feeling here, and how can you portray that, and that. And then that's basically, then we clunk it all together like that. So we understand what our motives is for each scene. We understand our backstory. Why are we at this position where we are now? And then we start blocking it. And then say, right, okay, let's just wipe it. Let's try something else. And let's do it different. Or say it something differently or something like that. So it's been very collaborative, but it's also been very experimental as well. And I've only actually put my 2 cents worth in the last 2 or 3 weeks, you know, mostly it's the actors have been doing all the work, and they really, you know, embrace the characters, and they're really doing, you know, I'm so impressed with what we've got. It's going to be a great show for you to come along and watch.
It's a real difference from an actor's perspective, because humour is, it's a sense, you know, it's something you have a feel for.
Yeah.
And yet knowing what's too much or how to underplay in a thriller would be a pleasant challenge.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because in a psychological thriller, and I've seen a lot of psychological thrillers, and then when we get to that breaking point of the antagonist, the main antagonist, or what the story is about, then it becomes funny, you know, or it's not serious anymore, and you can't relate to it and stuff like that. So that's been a big thing on me as a director, to make sure that we don't cross that line of being silly and funny, because, I mean, you can say, oh, well, you know, he's a psycho, he screams and yells and stuff like that, but actually they don't do that.
No.
Most psycho killers and stuff, you don't even know that they are. They're like your next door neighbour and things like that, or whatever, and stuff like that. So it's like, but then you don't want to, you still want to give the audience Easter eggs and stuff to see those little bit of narcissism
of
coming through,
almost.
That, you know, that humiliation, that, you know, that strive for power and control, and that manipulation coming through. You want to see those in a lot of face acting as well. You can just change that person's thing just with a look of their face, and we use that. Okay, it's like I say to my antagonist, right, you need to do your death stare now. And so that's when we see that, okay, he's gone from this mild-mannered person into his brain's clicking into psycho mode and stuff like that, and things like that. So it's very muted, but then obviously we grow on that. We grow on that and grow on that. And then at the end of it, obviously everything falls apart. There's a big, massive, you know, revelations, and there's also a real strange character turn at the end as well. But at the end, justice is played because, yeah. And, I mean, the one thing about the play is that, you know, from the start that there's a murderer in the play, and then you pretty much pick up really early who the murderer is. But the actual play is not about, you know, the murders. It's about that psychological change and that behaviour change throughout the course of a play with someone who has those sort of tendencies, and also how people interact with that, you know. So, yeah.
How's the set coming along?
Oh, as usual, we've got a top set. So it's just a box set, standard box set. And of course Malcolm and Malcolm McDonald and Kevin Marshall have been doing their great work, so it's very, you got the old wood veneer things, and then painting at the top. We've got a nice sunroom which they go out in the back. 19 we've managed to scrounged some 1950s circa furniture and things like that. So it's again, it's another impressive set that I mean, the talent that we have down there is amazing with that sort of stuff.
In all areas, you're quite right.
Yeah.
You said when we started out that it's Repertory Invercargill's 90th anniversary year.
Yes.
Happy birthday, Rep. And that the committee asked you to go and look at what was done in that first year. I'm guessing pretty much everything would have been British.
Yes. Yeah, definitely everything was very British. And I think it was quite amazing that actually they actually did this play after 2 years just being out and on the
you wouldn't be able to do that now.
No, absolutely not. And so and if you have a look at the history of Repertory, there is a lot of English influence and things like that. I mean, a majority of our plays are English and stuff like that. And I think it's just, America's a relatively young country, but I mean, I think America, or you know, any other country like that, if you look at obviously you know, the history of theatre in England and stuff like that, you know, going from Shakespearean times, and we've all, you know, every kid had to do Shakespeare and go through all that sort of stuff. So
there's a bigger pool of material.
And remember, 1930s, we're still colonised. We're still part of the, you know, part of the great British Empire. So it was the thing to do. And to me, for a very, I mean, a bit of a coup for Repertory in 1936 to actually get a, you know, an off East End play, but also a play which doesn't actually require a massive lot of set work or all that sort of stuff, and you could actually, you know, there's not much in the way of you know, special effects or the stuff that we rely on now to make a show razzle dazzle and all that sort of stuff. It's just plain storytelling, plain script writing, and just really good characters.
You mentioned the pool of talent that we have here in all areas, but if we talk about the pool of talent that we have in the acting area, which is rich.
Yeah.
It would be a vastly different production, I imagine, to what the Invercargill Repertory Society did 90 years ago. Performance styles have changed. It would have been phenomenally stiff with the old school stagecraft. Yeah. You must turn this way, you must turn that way.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's what I thought about it as well, because now that, you know, over, you know, 100 years of, you know, great theatre directors and all that sort of stuff, and obviously the advent of TV and movies and all that sort of stuff and things like that, it was very much, and again, theatre, well, look at it from that perspective, you have all those sort of, there wasn't much else in 1930s or anything like that, so it wasn't.
And that's the thing, now you're competing against, you know, 100 channels of digital television and streaming platforms before you can even get someone out the door.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And that's the thing as well. So you've got so much more, and we've learnt so much more about the actual, you know, art of acting and theatre and all that sort of stuff as well, which makes it a richer and better experience. But you got to think of the times as well, that this is how people behaved in those times as well. So, you know, they wouldn't say a curse word or anything like that. It would be, you know,
there's not going to be throbbing wood then, is
there? Well, there is one curse word in the show. But
somebody says, damn.
But more than that, I had to put that in because because in the actual script, he just clicks his fingers. Right. And I thought, well, that has no effect at all.
Yeah. If you do it to somebody. If I did it to my wife, I'd click my fingers and it'd be a snap.
Oh, you probably have broken fingers. No, but I think that the better way to do that, and that's how we had to modify the script, was to make a verbalisation of that, and that would be a curse word or something or whatever and stuff like that. And
so with the just looking at the different styles of performance across 90 years, do you think the expectations of the audience of the performances have changed based on what it is that we consume in movies and television?
Yeah, you know, what I think it is the main thing is the length of shows.
Okay.
And the people want to go out not for 3 hours and they don't want to hear people just ramble and ramble and ramble. They want to see some, you know, they want to see some character development. They want to see some, you know, they want to see some good interactions. They want to see a good story and stuff like that. Because, you know, time is short, and you want, and in a thriller, you want to get that expectation of, on the edge of your seat. You anticipating how is this person going to react to the situation. I mean, there's a certain scene in the play where they actually get his luggage out, and he has this hat box. And, of course, we've just found out that the murder has happened and a part of that body is missing. And so they can't get into the hat box. So therefore, but then an antagonist does something there. So I'm not going to go into more detail about that, but there's little things like that and which adds that and how is he going to react to that, and you know, how does he meet his comeuppance and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So
your opening night on the 27th mm-hmm. is also a gala night.
Yes.
For Repertory and Vicag for the 90th, so a bit of a do before a lot of a show.
Mm-hmm.
And so that'll set the scene while all the cast sit backstage dacking themselves quietly, as you want breaking. On an opening
yep,
night.
Absolutely.
It's not an intentional pun, but it sounds thrilling.
Mm-hmm.
Partially because it's not something that people have the courage to put on as much anymore.
Yeah, we don't do them often.
But it's good that it's being done. It's nice that it has that historical connection to what was going on for the Invercargill Repertory Society, as it was, mm-hmm. 90 years ago. Because we see in the green room out the back all those posters of shows from years gone by.
Yeah.
And it's really nice. Because as a performer, it's a reminder of the history in which you follow when you go out and do a show. And it's not all just about enjoying yourself, because there's an organisation there and all the people who are not just working on the show each night, front of house, back of house, on stage, but all the people who've worked in the background.
Yeah, and it's amazing. We've got all our cast and people who help, and even the executive, all volunteers.
Mm.
You know, and that is very hard to get in these days and age, because it's such a commitment to have to do that. So we're really thankful for all our volunteers, and we want more. So
there's always opportunity. There's junior rep as well for young people wanting to get into it.
And that's doing really
well
as well. I mean, for the past 3 years, we've had at maximum capacity.
That's great.
We've had to turn people away, which is unfortunate, but we just don't have the facilities or the people to, you know, to cater to everybody and stuff like that. So, I mean, if you look at that from perspective, we've got some really good young talent out. You know, we always have. And it's, you know, we're in a good place. And as long as we've got people who can give up their time, help out, you know, do a bit of public service, actually encourage the arts, because we know that arts isn't high on some people's priorities and stuff like that. But I think it's such an important part of just culture in general, is that, understand or see some other person's perspective or see someone else's story and stuff like that.
Well, you never know what you're going to get from it.
That's right,
yeah. I got a wife.
Oh, my goodness.
Did very well.
Hitting on your wife a bit.
it's my job.
Okay.
Night Must Fall is the thriller by Emlyn Williams that Jason Fraser is directing for Repertory in Invercargill. It's on at Repertory House, corner of Esk and Jed Streets. If you want to book tickets, yes, you do. You can go to their website, invercargillrepertory.co.nz, and then you can find out more about what's going on with the group in general. As Jason said, there's many other roles that people are able to do. There'll be a link to buying tickets on that, or you can go to Repertory Invercargill's Facebook page, and there's a link on there. Night Must Fall is on at Rep House on March 27th and 28th, so it does the Friday and Saturday nights. Has the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday off and back from the 2nd of April through until the 4th. Not
right
doing an
Easter.
April Fool's show.
Well, no, it's just Wednesday nights are very hard for people to come out, and it's Easter as well. So again,
of course.
A bit of a...
So everyone will be chocked to the gunnels.
Mm.
Night Must Fall, Invercargill, Repertory Invercargill's 90th anniversary year opening production. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to seeing the show.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, if you want to keep up to date with what's going on in the arts world, artsmotoheku.co.nz is a place to do it. This show is available as a podcast. Is it? Yes, it is. Where do we get it? Thanks for asking.
There is the Artist Our Perception Facebook page. You get it there first. Radio Southland has a Facebook page. You can find Artist Our Perception, if you're an Apple user, on Apple Podcasts. If you're an Android, hello. Then you can download from Google Play the accessmedia.nz app. Select Radio Southland as your station, and I think we're the second show on it because they're all listed alphabetically. Artists Our Perception is brought to us thanks to Arts Merihaku. For Radio Southland, I'm Darren Ludlow.
Are you involved in the arts in Southland? Are you an artist? Is your organisation involved in the arts? Do you need more people to know what it is you do? Media training, social networking or website development? Do you need help with professional development or just getting in touch with the right people? Talk to Arts Merihaku because they're here to help. Email them, kia ora@artsmerihaku.co.nz, or look for them on Facebook. The Arts Advocates for the South, Arts Merihaku.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.